Session number 12133.
Can Archway real farm?
As I said, I was given the job of excavating this, or withdrawing this machine gun platoon, and it was very tough. If there had been a political agent there, and I'd had to stop and listen to him telling me what to do or not, there'd have been an absolute disaster. Luckily, there wasn't one there. Equally, if there had been there, I'd have told him to get out, or I'd have knocked him out. I couldn't be bothered.
Whereabouts was this exactly?
Oh, it was somewhere out in the mountains, near Razmak or near Rizani. I can't remember where it was.
What stage of your time there would that have been? At the beginning or the end?
No, it would have been the beginning of the summer 1939, because I went back on leave in June 39. And I arrived, I was returning from leave, having got married. Now, I went back in July, and I was returning from leave, and I was in Aden when war was declared on September the 3rd, 1939.
So this was a machine gun platoon of your own battalion?
Yes, all the Ulster Rifles, yes.
Were you at all familiar with what were the grievances of the tribesmen there, or was that just none of your concern?
Oh yes, we all knew what they wanted. They wanted complete political independence, and they were a very proud nation divided into a lot of tribes, speaking basically Pushto, a whole lot of variations of Pushto, and they wanted independence for the Northwest provinces. As simple as that. They didn't think that we, the British, and they don't think now that they, the Pakistanis, have any right to control them. They consider they are an independent nation. And don't forget that some of them, in colouring, were very similar to me. They weren't dark people, light skin, blue eyes, fair haired. Very likable indeed.
When you returned to India after the war, when you were at Bilaspur and Karachi in the months after the war, had the partition troubles started before you left?
Yes. The rumblings were there. We had a mutiny of the Royal Indian Navy in Karachi, which we had to put down. And we did that by our generals, a man called Major General Eric Dhawan, who was one of the original airborne people in 1940. I was original, 1940. And I was chief of staff of the division, and we went down and we told them to get down below decks, because they wouldn't stop mutinying. We were going to remove the top works, whatever you call it, in the ship, the bridge. And we just fired it 25 pounders at point-blank range and sliced the whole top of the ship off, and then they packed up.
Which ship was this?
I can't remember what it was called. It was an Indian naval ship of some description, a destroyer or something like that. And there was a there was a shore training establishment for naval cadets called HMIS, Her Majesty's Indian Ship. You know, they call land places ships. And I happened to pass it on the way back, and I saw all the cadets drawn up in a square with Indian petty officers, no officers. And I had with me a platoon of Gurkha parachute troops as an escort. I stopped and went in, and the chief petty officer was an enormous Sikh. And I said, Saab, have you got any problems? Can we help? He said, oh, no, I can deal with it, sir, with this, and holding a cane. So I said, well, have they been mutinying? He said, oh, yes, they're kids, they tried to mutiny. I said, what are you going to do? And he said, well, see the bench? So the six leaders will go over that, they'll get six of the best, and that'll be the end of it. And it was.
Did he administer it?
Yeah, there and then.
You saw it?
Yeah, I saw the first one. And then I drove off. They knew how to deal with discipline with kids like that. But that was the only trouble. They had fired some shells into Karachi from these ships, but they'd forgotten to prime them, so the shells didn't go off. Luckily, they fired them into the bazaar. Luckily, they didn't go off. There'd been absolute murder if they had. They killed one or two people, but nothing serious.
What were they firing at?
Well, indiscriminately, just into Karachi to make a point, I think. I don't know what they hoped to achieve, because the ships had both Hindu and Mohammedans on board. So it was all rather a mystery. It started in Bombay and spread to Karachi.
Were there many ships mutinying in the harbour at Karachi?
Three, I think. I think it was three. I think they had a destroyer and a couple of sloops or something like that, or frigates.
But you just dealt with one?
Yeah. There's no point in wrecking the others if you could deal with one.
Were there any other units involved in putting that mutiny down?
How do you mean?
Apart from your own?
Airborne troops? The Indian Airborne Division were given the job, that was all. Nobody else.
Were they flying political flags?
No. It was a complete mystery. I don't know what sort of gesture they were trying to make. It was rather similar, I think, to one day I heard an awful noise coming from my staff officer's room. I had a mixed staff of about 10 majors and captains at division headquarters, and they were British, Hindu, Mohammedan, Parsi, Sikh, you name it. And they were having a heck of a row, and the senior man was a Britisher, and he didn't seem to be keeping much control. And I didn't bother to find out what they were arguing about. I knew it was something to do with the partition coming up. I simply said to them, and because there was dead silence when I walked into the room, I simply said, if I hear of any of this again, and if you're not prepared to work as colleagues, as you have been doing for months and months and months, and behave like grown-ups, if I hear it again, I should put the first three or four that I hear making a noise under close arrest, and I'll have them court-martialed. And that was an end of it. I never had any more trouble. I never discovered what they were doing. It became very childish, and it became a hot, sort of provocative sentence could start a thing off. Everything was very tense. You see, we were dividing the division up at the time, splitting it. And it was a very sad thing. Here was this division which would all work so hard to make a really efficient unit to fight against the Japanese. Then suddenly we had to split it up, and men had been friends overnight, almost became enemies.
How did you split the division? How did you go about it?
Well, the Hindu regiments were earmarked for India, the Mohammedan regiments earmarked for Pakistan, and the Sikhs mostly to India, because Amritsar is after all in India, but some Sikhs didn't want to go to India, so they were given the option of going to Pakistan if they wanted to, individuals.
So you didn't see anything of the slaughter between Hindus and Muslims?
I'd left by then, come back.
Can we say something about the time that you spent in Iceland in 1942 with 147 Infantry Brigade as Brigade Major? Can you tell me what the attitude of the Icelanders was to being occupied?
Yes, generally speaking, I would say that the men resented it very much, and the women didn't. The women seemed to welcome us, in fact. And I think there were reasons for this. The Icelandic men then appeared to us to be generally rather ineffective and wet. And I think they were trying to make a point by being resentful. The women, on the other hand, had got living conditions which had been beyond all their dreams during the war. They had plenty of food, plenty of vegetables for the civilian population, not for the troops, because we had to take these ascorbic tablets to prevent scurvy and things. Plenty of milk. They had plenty of engineers who were able to extend the natural hot water central heating system throughout the city of Reykjavik. They had roads which were made, which had, in places where roads had never existed before. Electricity were in villages where there had been no electricity. Officially, Iceland was dry, and you could only buy wine, except for wine. You could only buy wine in hotels, nothing else. But there was masses of booze from the troops, and the women welcomed this, and the men didn't, for some reason. And I think also there was probably an element of extreme jealousy among the men, because, after all, the women were outnumbered by goodness knows how many Allied troops to one. And they were thoroughly enjoying it. They were asked out to dances, and there were, arrangement was that all the outside the unit and brigade and divisional headquarters messes, all the officers' clubs and the other ranks clubs, recreational clubs, etc., were run by the Americans, and they did them very well indeed. You had huge huts with dance floors, superb restaurants. I don't know how they manage it. And of course these Icelandic women have always been asked to these parties and so on and so forth. I didn't have any experience of the political side. At brigade major level, one didn't mix in that sort of thing. We just got on with the job, which was patrolling the coasts and being prepared to stop an invasion if there was one.
Were there any marriages between the Icelandic women and the...
I think there were a few, yes. I think there were a few. I seem to remember some at our brigade headquarters.
Was there any spying on behalf of the Germans that you came in contact with?
Yeah, there were one or two we caught. There was also an attempted landing in a bay up in the northeast. They put some men ashore from the submarine, but somebody tipped us off. And... it wasn't our brigade, but I heard about it. It was one of the other brigades, and they simply sent a company of men up there who sort of sat around the bay. And then when the Germans landed, I think they sent in about a dozen men or something like that, or perhaps more. When they landed, they said, "Hello, you've had it." There was no fighting, anything else.
What about the spies that you caught? What do you remember of those?
I don't very much. I just remember hearing that some spies had been caught in the town. Well, I can't remember whether they were caught by American or British troops. I do remember one thing which has stuck in my mind as a picture in my mind, which was quite a fantastic picture. When we came back in either late May or late May, I think, in 1941. And we came back on American, in a huge convoy of American troop ships, no British troop ships. And I remember hearing the cry from the lookouts of ships, and looking on this lovely day, one could see that they were warships coming over. You could see the mastheads coming over the horizon. And then gradually you began to see the ships. And then suddenly a complete, huge battle fleet. It was a British battle fleet with battleships, cruisers, every type of ship going flat out after one of the German ships. And they passed us almost within hailing distance. And it was a most fantastic sight. And I will never, ever forget it. It even had the American sailors cheering their heads off as they went by. And they looked so majestic, and they appeared to be going so fast. And one thought, well, good heavens, how can anything ever stand up to that lot?
You said 41, but I think from what you've written on the form that you must have returned from Iceland in May 42.
Sorry, quite right, 42, I beg your pardon. Yes. Do you want me to say that again?